This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
We are at the beginning of day two, and I have already told you and talked with a few people about during some of the activities that have been happening, the pre-convention activities, as well as everything that's happened yesterday. And we also had chatted with Mark D'Souza a little bit earlier, saying that you're going to be hearing some more from him as he provides some color. And here he is right now. Hey, Mark. Good morning.
Hey, Scotty. Good morning. How are you? It is still morning here.
It is morning. Still morning. Boy, there's so much going on.
Oh, my gosh.
So much going on.
The first day they said, you will not be able to see everything. We planned it that way. Yeah. And they absolutely did. You can't see everything. You've got to pick and choose.
There was a guy who was sitting next to me. He said, I really wanted to see Jeff Copeland's coin thing, but we're watching the close-up competition.
Right. I wasn't missing the close-up competition for
Jeff
Copeland.
Oh, my gosh, that was fantastic. Anyhow, so what we're going to do is kind of go back and give you a recap for the night before thing that happened on Thursday, which was supposed to be the Lance Burton and Friends, and it was replaced then by the Magic Living Room.
First, I got to say, for a bunch of quote-unquote local guys who just out of the goodness of their heart did this for everybody. That was just amazing. It just proves how wonderful the world of magic and magicians are. They banded together, and it was a terrific show.
Yeah.
Dal Sanders emceed and did exactly what an MC is supposed to do. You keep the show moving. You don't have to bother doing tricks. You introduce the acts, and it moved so smoothly. It was really, really good. A fellow named Zach Mers opened up. And by the way, of the five performers, four of them were in Penn and Teller.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Zach was on Penn and Teller. He did a kind of a version of the hug-kill routine, as everybody
right.
knows.
Tom Stone's thing.
Exactly, yeah. And then did a really clever idea combining Paul Harris's Fizz Transpo with a trick put out by Hanson Chen called Sparkling. And makes that whole trick so much more visible. I'm not going to say anything more about it,
right?
Because this was a brilliant idea.
Brilliant idea.
And deserves not to be stolen.
Yeah.
he was followed by Anthony Dempsey, another PNT guy. And he did a couple things, but the finish was the thing that he did on Penn and Teller, which is the trick with his grandma. Mm-hmm. And, boy, what a funny routine that is. What a funny darn routine.
Yeah.
And just very, very effective. The third act was the act that was not on Penn and Teller. And I got to tell you, all the acts were good. But this is the guy that stood out to me. Ian Richards, an Australian who's been living here for a lot of years. You know, from the moment he steps on stage, he establishes his persona, which is a low-key yet hysterical persona. I mean, he is just very dry
humor.
Tall,
bald-headed guy. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
An Australian accent.
So funny. So funny. And just through the whole thing, he just keeps building that character. The great trick he did was Risk, which is the staple gun roulette routine, which I do. And afterwards, we talked, and he thanked me. He says, you're the reason that I'm using that Lazy Susan. I saw you do it in your Penguin lecture. And I was like, oh, that's great. But he has a finish, a capper on this thing that is so funny. I just looked at him and said, I want to steal it so bad, but I'm not going to. It's just, it's so you.
It's so you. Yes.
Yeah, it's so
He's
you.
The only one who does that.
If you ever hear this guy perform, go see him.
Yep.
He's really, really, really good. Followed by Giancarlo Bernini, terrific mentalist. Giancarlo did a gig in New York City that morning and on his own dime, changed his plane, came back here in time, and literally just in time to get to do the show. Terrific corporate act, mentalist. Had some very, very clever material. Very nice stuff. And the show was closed by John Michael Hinton, our buddy from 4F.
High energy.
Super high energy. And high energy and high hair.
yeah.
If you've ever seen him, you know what I'm talking about. But did a bunch of different stuff with Rubik's Cubes. But he had a really clever bill transposition with a torn bill and a whole bill.
Mm-hmm. That's a Wayne Houchin idea.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very clever trick.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. So that was the show for Thursday night. Nice way to open this convention. Yesterday morning, Gustavo Rolli lectured from Argentina. Oh,
that's right.
Very clever guy. He lectured about his creative process.
Yeah,
great stuff. And showed a lot of the stuff that he's created over the years. Yeah, I mean, it's dealer stuff, but he shows how and why he developed it. And showed how everything worked, and, you know, so it's not like, you know, you have to buy something. It's, you know, you're looking to go, wow, that's clever. I think I will buy that.
I ended up buying something myself.
I bought three things.
We have enough stuff. We don't need any more there, Mark.
We don't. But one of the things,
so cool.
One of the things, Supercan, he has developed so much more than when he originally put it out. It's so different than the original. And I had the original one. I bought this one. I said, this is so much more versatile. Great gimmick. Great gimmick. Later, Diamond Jim Tyler lectured on Bamboozlers.
It's a great series of books.
Fabulous series of books.
And they're pocket size, so they fit inside your jacket pocket.
Yeah, and as he said, they're made to look like little Bibles, so you can study them in church.
Right.
But I can't begin to tell you how many things he went through. And some of them are barbetches, some of them are tricks. Just
puzzles.
Great fun to see. Puzzles, yeah. I'll tell you, Jim lectured in my house a bunch of years ago, probably a dozen years ago. And my older son used to come down to lectures once in a while. He came down to watch Jim. And the invisible dice trick he did, my son learned that. He did that for years. He loved that. That was a trick he would just show to his friends.
That's a go-to,
It's a great go-to. Gabriel Moreno lectured on high-end residencies. And what a good lecture
I didn't get to hear that.
Holy cow. I had met Gabriel. I'd never seen him work. And my goodness, it's obvious this guy works. And just the whole subject of getting high-end residencies, meaning you don't go to Chili's. You go to a place where people frequent the place that can afford to hire you for private gigs. And he did one of the close-up sets that he does in one of these residencies. And it's just great thinking. It's obvious he works. It's just really, I was really, really pleased
with
this lecture.
That one.
Yeah, it's a lecture worth hearing. Absolutely.
And that was who again?
Gabriel, sorry, no. This is terrible hitting 70. His last name is Moreno. Fabian Moreno. Yeah. Why did I write Gabriel? I don't know. Fabian Moreno.
I've heard Fabian give talks before here at KOM and elsewhere, and his lectures are phenomenal, and he has great chops, but I haven't heard this specific one about high-end residents.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah, Fabian's great.
Good. Yeah, very, very good stuff. And then last night, I got to see Mind to Mind. They're doing the performance.
James and Marina.
Yeah, James Harrington.
Yeah.
James and Marina Harrington. This is a two-person mind-reading act. This is a portion of the show. They have a theater in Dubai where they work, and this is just a small portion of it, about a 25-minute act, and they wanted to do it for small groups, so it's limited to 30 people in the room. You had to sign up in advance. They're doing it five times, and I'm thinking of trying to get a ticket to see it again. You know, I'm not going to use the phrase we use, but it is a two-person mental act, similar to the Evasons or the Clairvoyants. Or the Aronsons, they used to do it. Tommy and Liz Tucker back in the old days.
Yeah.
This is a really good-looking young couple.
Yeah, he's in the UK and she's from Ukraine.
Exactly, and yet their English is absolute. Well, his English is perfect, but her English is perfect. They make such an amazing appearance on stage. Their work is fast and just phenomenal. It's very, very, very quick-paced, and even though you may know how it's done, you don't know how they're doing it.
No.
It's probably one of the best three acts of its type working today.
Yeah.
I think they're...
Michael Chout had introduced me to them and said, you've got to see these people and talk with them. I'm going to hopefully get a chance to chat with them more depth.
Just phenomenal, and really nice people. Nice people. And then last night, Adrian Vega did his close-up show twice, Maestro, one-man show. About an hour show, probably about 50 minutes.
50 minutes, yeah.
Yeah. He had just arrived. He planned just arrived from Spain 4 hours before
he was on a seven-hour jet lag in addition to that.
Exactly. So that's
And he was just great.
Just the structure of the whole act. It's a card act. I mean, it's a card show. But referring to the maestros, the people that came before him and doing tribute to them. And Adrian, you know... We talk about the Spanish performers. There's a similarity, the Spanish energy. And it's nice that the best of them, and Adrian is one of the best of them, have broken out of the Juan Tamariz mold.
Yeah.
And Adrian has this, there's just a little tiny bit of sarcasm to his wit. It's really, really, he's so engaging, so clever.
Yeah.
and the material.
Looking forward to his lecture later today, too.
Yeah, yeah. His work is just really good.
And speaking of today...
Well, before we get to today, the collectors... Mark Jensen speaking on Marshall Brodin and Chip Romero speaking on Doug Henning. And I know Chip's done talks on Henning before, and my understanding, this is the first time I've seen him do it. I mean, I know Chip, but it's the first time I've seen him do the talk. Every time it's a little bit different.
It is.
And he had brought with him the Henning three-sort suspension from the Magic Show and the zigzag that Doug helped build for Spellbound, which is pre-Magic Show. So it was so cool having that stuff there and being able to take pictures with it and all. I think Mark did a wonderful presentation on Marshall, a lot of PowerPoint slides and videos, and a lot of great information. Very, very, very good. The information on Henning that Chip put out there was just phenomenal. And he finished by performing the mirror penetration. Flexible mirror.
Flexible mirror.
Yeah. And I have never seen it done better. I just thought he just does such an amazing job with that. And, that was just a way to cap off that thing. So it was a great evening. It was really, really fun. We stayed up way too late. But
it was late. Because that went well after midnight.
Well after midnight, yeah. Yeah, but the whole thing ran about 2 hours.
I had to bail out a little bit early so I can go back and put together the podcast for the day. So I got everything up there last night, so... Anyhow,
good for you.
I sacrifice for you guys who are listening and gals.
Thank you. Thank you.
So that brings us to today, and we started off with the close-up competition.
Exactly.
We had 9 competitors. Was that about right?
Exactly right. 9 competitors. And there was just a great variety of competition.
That's for sure.
There was a variety of levels, I think, of the competition.
That's for sure.
There were some acts that were standouts for various reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And... I certainly don't want to give a critique or anything because we still have to wait for the judges.
Sure.
We'll go through who was on the competition. Raj Howe from Canada did his, I guess, now well-established astrology act with the planets and the stars. A young fellow from Ohio named James Sweetek, or Jay Sweetek. Again, engaging personality. Kind of low-key but funny.
It looked and reminded me a little bit of Bill Malone.
Yeah.
Young Bill Malone.
Yeah, yeah. And he just did some absolutely impossible card stuff.
Uh-huh.
He did a version of the Invisible Travelers, the Ace Transposition, right. That just is the most
great.
Visual, incredible version you've seen. And he's got a blow-off to this hack. Again, I don't want to tip it, ruin it if you haven't seen it. But, boy, when he does that finish, it's like, holy cow, how did this just all happen? It was just really well done. He was followed by Dragon Hibbler. From Michigan.
Michigan.
Does an act with a notebook. And it's basically things in this notebook that become reality.
And Rorschach test psych things or whatever.
Yeah, but also there's some really strong mentalism that's part of that all. Mm-hmm. Very, very good act. I thought did well. Followed by Michael Blumke. This is probably the act that got the best reaction of the day. It's cups and balls.
No one got standing ovation, but I think he was the closest.
He was close. He got a partial standing O.
Yeah.
It's a very funny presentation.
You're just going to say cups and balls and leave it at that?
Well,
nobody's going to do what he does.
Okay, nobody's going to do what he does. So it's cups and balls, but he's using mechanical hands to turn the cups and pick things up.
You would get like a Toys R Us.
Exactly.
Kind of thing,
it's a little robot hands.
Yeah.
And it's hysterical. It is just so funny.
And he does it deadpan also.
Oh,
like, these are his normal hands.
Totally deadpan. And the whole bit with the trash cans, throwing the trash can away. And
the watch keeps disappearing and reappearing.
Oh,
on
yeah.
This.
Oh, I mean, he's got running bits. And with all that. It's good magic.
Multiple misdirection periods.
Holy cow.
Wait a minute, what happened there?
Holy cow. It's like taking Tommy Wonder cups and balls and ratcheting up a little bit.
Yep.
Really well done. He was followed by the other end of the spectrum, Blaze Sarah. Wow.
Talk about chops.
Holy cow. First of all, good-looking young guy with an incredibly great personality.
Right.
And this is card chops. I mean, I talk to people. I've seen his work before. And
me too.
You know, this is stuff he's developed. These are techniques
that
are all his.
Yeah.
And he teaches them. and you can't do them. I mean,
I've been to his lectures. All you can do is watch.
Oh, my God.
And
it's
appreciate it.
Just unbelievable. Yeah. And just great, great stuff.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Followed by another Canadian, Chris Stoltz, who did a two-card transposition like four times. And he had a bit with an empty glass that fills with a drink, and he drinks it and it becomes filled again at the end. Kind of a low-key act, but, you know, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. Followed by Henry Tom, who we've seen before, another Canadian, doing his Tooth Fairy act. And every time we see it, you know, there's just a little bit more to it. He just keeps developing this.
Very clever kind of Twilight Zone thing where he becomes a Tooth Fairy.
Exactly. And it's you know, he's got a great presentation. He's got a great personality.
Yeah,
he's just this lovable guy. Followed by Billy Schwab. Boy, the Canadians really were in force.
They were, weren't they?
Holy
yes.
cow. Billy did a think-a-drink routine unlike any think-a-drink routine you've seen. It's for close-up or parlor. It is with an empty, ungimmick teapot, which he gives away at the end. And he has them choose a bottle of water. He puts water in, has them choose a drink, choose a glass out of five glasses, and pours that drink. And he does that four times.
Yeah.
And it's baffling. It is clever. And, man, I think it's a very solid routine.
Very solid. I have to agree that at the end, whenever he said, okay, and I want you to take this, the volunteer, and I want you to be able to show it to the judges so they know that it is what it's supposed to be.
Exactly.
And I've never seen anything like that.
No.
It's a great,
no,
it's great act.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very, very clever. And
that's what I'm saying. People around me, his heads were snapping. Saying, what? He's giving it away?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, and I'm hoping he's going to be entered in the invention category for FISM because this is something different.
Right.
Something very,
right.
very different. Last act on was David Frost. I don't know where David's from. He has an accent. I know he's not an American. And he did a highly technical act, not technical magic, technical electronics. This is like an AI
hologram
act that you're just looking at this going, how the hell is this happening? You know,
okay,
just
so imagine just met a Meadow Perry who does this beautiful bubble act.
Right.
She's got this screen, like a bubble screen,
exactly.
And where you see the bubbles like on this screen. And so
yep.
he's standing behind this type of a screen, if you will.
Yep.
But it doesn't look like a screen.
No, no.
No,
you're
don't
seeing
realize
straight
that.
Through it.
Yeah, you're seeing the hologram he's seeing, and then he makes them come real.
Yeah, it's a holographic images that are moving across this thing, and he just basically touches it, and it's not real.
I really felt like I was looking at the future.
Yeah.
I seriously thought, you know, this is what's going to be 20 years from now.
Yeah, and there are some others that are doing it, you know, similar type stuff. But
I don't mean just magic. I mean in real life.
Oh, yeah, No, I think you're right. I think you're right. But it's an astounding act.
Yeah.
From
to
that
me, it
standpoint.
Seems like a FISM act. This is something that has an international feel
yep.
and appeal to me.
Yep, yep. And as I said, I mean, there are others that are doing similar kind of things, but not exactly the way that David's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is an act that should
Tariq
go
Watson does a lot of high-tech stuff.
Exactly. That's one of the guys I was really, really thinking of, as well as the fellow from France that was on AGT a couple of years ago, where he was doing it on the tabletop.
Mm-hmm.
But it was projections on the tabletops becoming reality. And Simon Pirro from Germany also does similar kind of stuff. But this was very different than all of that.
Yeah.
So I think this is something that deserves to be seen. It's very, very clever.
Very. In retrospect, I think all those acts were great and top-notch. I mean, this was really a FISM competition.
It was. It was. Well, as you know, we're kind of getting involved with, you know, doing some things with the, you know, trying to help the FISM competitors.
That's right, particularly the Americans, so that way they can step up their game to compete on an international level.
Exactly, exactly. So there's some people here that I'm really looking forward to working with.
I'm looking forward to their future as well. Well, listen, thanks very much, Mark. We've got to go in now for the Gay Blackstone tribute.
Since exactly.
Having a special thing for her. Man, this is just chock full of all kinds of stuff here today.
Absolutely.
We're going to get together again tomorrow, and we'll recap what's happening.
Beautiful.
Okay, until then, that was Mark D'Souza, Scotty L. So much going on at this convention, combined with the TAOM and the SAM, and we are talking now with the, I guess, going to be the current president of the SAM, and that is John Midgley. Hey there, John.
Howdy.
You got it down.
That's
perfect.
Right.
That's right. Have you been to Texas before?
Last year I was at TAOM.
Okay, that's right. That counts.
Yeah.
And this year you have already been gone through the procedure. I know you had your board meeting yesterday.
Yep. Was it?
Okay, and so officially the wand has been passed.
Yeah, officially, yes.
And so what is your agenda for this year? What are you planning on doing or hoping to accomplish?
Well, going with that, the theme that Tom Gentile had in the past, which was Dan Sclair had come up with, who's a computer had recently passed away. Mm-hmm. We do more together. That's really working on that unity. And then also figuring out a business plan for the future so that the SAM can continue to last for another 100+ years.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And next year's convention, have you decided where you're going to have the SAM? I guess it's just going to be on your own next year, just like we're going to have the TAOM on our own.
So next year, because we now can say howdy and y'all correctly, we are going to invite everybody to Nashville, Tennessee, okay. July 3rd to 5th.
Okay. How far away is that from where you live?
From Murfreesboro. It's just on the outside, so a nice 30-40 minute drive if there's no traffic. But if you're trying to get to work, you know, a few hours.
Were you one of the proponents saying, hey, we ought to have it in my backyard?
No, actually,
or just accidental?
No. It was not me.
Okay.
But they had been exploring it, I guess, for a while, and then it just, I guess, made sense to them since, oh, well, it's Johnstown,
right.
So okay.
So this has been a challenging convention, and it's really been coming together perfectly, certainly with the coordinators who have been producing the whole thing then as well. Has there been something here that you've seen so far that's been outstanding?
The Stars of Tomorrow show.
I just finished that.
I'm so excited for those kids. Last act that we just saw, the manipulations that kid. I know I've been doing card manipulations for like 20 years, and I'm watching this young man, and I'm just, holy cow, that's amazing. So it's just fantastic.
Yeah, he was. And this guy was, as I understand, also the winner, Harry Piper is his name.
That's right.
And Harry was, I think, had won the... Young Magician of the Year for the Magic Circle.
That's correct. That's what they were sharing.
And he was the one that brought everybody to their feet for a standing ovation at this
one. Oh my gosh, it was outstanding.
Yeah, it really was good. The other shows have been really good so far as well. This morning, the competition, I guess you watched the close-up competition. Had nine different competitors.
I did not this morning because I was spending time with the youth. So the kids had the stuff.
So tell me about what's happening with youth, because I was watching the competition then this morning. So what was going on then with the youth project?
Yeah, so...
more people should know about how the SAM is involved so much with the youth, with Sammy.
Absolutely. So I was for the first part of it, which was Bronson Chadwick was teaching the youth, many of the performers that were on stage today, not just how to perform a trick or effect or whatever terminology you use, but how to think like a magician. He was working them through these amazing exercises,
sure.
Even to help them if you're getting stuck in a creative process, mm-hmm. to some tools that you can use right away to randomize something to help give you motivation, mm-hmm. and incentive for how you want to perform. And then I know that there was a lot of other people that came in right after him to teach even more layers for it. But his section was fantastic, and it just...
It does seem to be kind of a running theme whenever that Gustav Reilly had been talking about creativity and how to think and create ideas,
yes.
and things like that. I'm glad to see that the youth is looking at that kind of a thing as well, finding their own character.
Well, that's so what Bronson has done is taken all the things that we wish we could have known when we were first starting out and actually making that tool and making it available for those young people.
Right.
So I'm excited.
One of the exciting things, I think, too, this year, I don't know if they've done this in the past, but then tell me, John, that is that we have given free registration to youth,
yes.
who qualified.
Yes.
And so have they been doing that for a while?
Yeah. We do that every year. So what we do is we apply for a grant with the MEF, and if we get that approved, come on in, kids. It's free.
So next year also they should plan on coming, and they could. How do they go about getting that grant or getting to...
So we go ahead and do that on our end, and so you just register as a youth, mm-hmm. and it's just automatically deducted. So it's automatically taken care of, and we do all the back end stuff with
okay.
the grant.
So if you were under 18?
Yeah, under 18 and a SAMY member, SAMY member, mm-hmm. Come on down, and then you would still need a guardian or a parent to join you, and there's a small fee for that.
How do you go about becoming an SAMY member?
Come on over to MagicSam.com and check out our members section, and you can sign up right there. Of course, we're all over the different socials, so Facebook, X, Instagram. You can reach out to us in any way that you want, but MagicSam.com is the place to go and sign up.
Who is the person that's overcharging? who is charged with being overseeing all of the SAMI group?
Right now, it's still Arlen. So Arlen's been doing it, and I think he's going to do it for another year. I'm looking at getting more involved with the working with the youth, especially after this year of president.
I know in the past that they've had some classes in which they have taught adults to work with youth, and also I think in some cases you have to have a certification?
Youth protection certification. So we also had that this morning. Mm-hmm. So any of our folks that work with youth, we get them certified, trained, and background check. We really want to make it a safe environment for all parties involved.
Yeah. And so that way that parents or anybody who's involved would know that you're going to be having a safe instructor, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah, we want to do the right thing in those situations. And it's also a benefit for you to have as a performer, too, because you can show even your clientele,
right.
You know, you have a certification, you have had a background check. I know certain sites like Thumbtack and stuff, you can put those kind of verifications
right,
on there.
Right. And it's important to have that kind of validation then as well. You are going to be traveling the world, I guess, quite literally,
I guess,
now and the next year.
Yeah.
Are you planning on going to FISM and touring next year?
That's what they tell me.
It's on your agenda. You and your wife are heading out.
Oh, I'm very excited. What an honor. Just surreal. Yeah.
Have you traveled to Europe before?
No.
So this will be a new experience for you.
Yes. I've always wanted to go to England because that's where my family originally came from. So
yeah.
Blackpool, here I come as well.
Oh, you're going to Blackpool?
That's my goal.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm going to be rooming with Dal and Mark Whitehouse again this year myself.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good.
That is a fun convention. They'll enjoy that certainly as well. And yeah, they'll enjoy getting the chance to meet you. Have you got anybody, by the way, knowing what a great artist you are, have you got anybody kind of in line that you're working on currently?
Oh, I'm actually almost done with another portrait. So.
Have you put that on Facebook so far?
I haven't. Actually, the black and white version. So it was Terry Hedges. So since I perform at House of Cards in Nashville fairly regularly as one of the regular performers, I've been illustrating all of the people that perform at House of Cards.
Nice.
So, yeah.
And are they going to put their pictures on the walls there or something? Or
I don't know. Okay. I just am doing it because... Something
you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was so honored and flattered and surprised when you did one of me.
Yours is one of my favorite.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed that, and I display it proudly.
Yeah. Yours is on my wall. I had you autograph it last year.
Thank you. Well, John, I wish you nothing but the best of luck for the coming year as well.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Congratulations. It's well-deserved.
Well, thank you, sir. I'm here to help, so reach out if you need something,
And if
folks.
They need to, how do they get in touch with you?
Sure. So johnbmidgley.com. I'm also on Facebook mostly, so John B. Midgley is really where to find me. But you can always go to magicsam.com. We have a social network built into that website as well, and so all of my information's on that as well.
Yeah, so there you go. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that is the national president of the Society of American Magicians, John Midgley.
Thank you,
John.
Whoa, surreal. Surreal.
This is Scotty L. We are getting ready for the next lecture, which is going to be with Artem Shukin, who is a FISM winner and is going to be giving us a lecture about some amazing stuff. I heard him at Winter Carnival a couple of years ago, and I know everyone's going to be enjoying it. We probably got about a couple hundred people here who are watching them right now. But as we prepare for this, later this evening, got somebody who is going to be our MC I'm sitting with right now, and that's BJ Mallon. Hey, BJ.
Hey, Scott. How you doing?
Fantastic. It is tonight, right?
It is tonight, yeah. The International Gala Show at the Texas Hall.
And are you all prepared, or are you kind of going to wing it?
So I'm mildly prepared, I'd say. You know, I tend to fly by the seat of my pants.
I know, but you do it so well. It looks like it's just like you're a swan swimming across the top of the lake. You know?
I'm glad I'm able to pull it off, because inside that swan is putting droppings every few feet as it's swimming.
Well, do you remember who all some of the people are who are going to be on the show tonight?
Yes, tonight the show starts with Adrian Kill from France. And then we have four Japanese performers. They were the ones that were actually at Abbott's last year, some of the performers at Abbott's last year. So we have Yu Komohara, we have Shempei, we have Shoma, and Wessie, which is great, because when Wessie performed at Abbott's, he went by his real name, which was Takahito Inoue. So I like a few less syllables.
So that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk with you, so this way that I knew that you could pronounce their names.
Right.
Gotta get that practice in.
Yeah, yeah. Everything is written phonetically and burnt into my brain at this point.
So that's another reason, I guess, that they chose you, since you'd already introduced them last year.
I think Mike just likes me to see me struggle through Japanese pronunciations.
Yeah, he's just sitting back here just chuckling to himself, I'm sure. That.
Pretty much.
Well, you're an awesome MC, and he recognized that early on, said, we got to get BJ. I mean, after you had worked with those guys there at Abbott's. And have you done other conventions as MCs, or is it just aside from Abbott's? Is this the first one? Or?
This is the debut of BJ Mallon at conventions outside of Abbott's, functioning as an MC. So we're about to find out. I mean, you can take the BJ out of colon, but can you take the colon out of BJ?
Killing me, man. I should be your agent, because I think that after people see you here, because this is a bigger scale than what they have then at Abbott's, I mean, being a worldwide thing that we have right now with FISM and everything then as well, people are going to want to say, who are convention organizers, will say, he's darn good. Where'd he come from? Colon, Michigan. That you should you should be booking BJ. You do a great job. I'm envious.
I really appreciate that, yeah. Scott. That means a lot.
As an MC, I know how much work that is involved in all that, and you do a great job.
It definitely, it's a unique marriage of many of my skill sets. I didn't set out to be a great MC, but
yeah.
I didn't set out to move to colon either, Scott. Most of the best things that have ever happened to me haven't been my plan.
Well, you worked at Abbott's for a while. Were you making, were you a craftsman, or were you behind the counter?
No, I was primarily demonstrating behind the counter, you know, doing nickels to dimes a couple dozen times a day, Color Monty, or a drawer box, or the ring and spring, or the coil and ring. I should show you my routine sometime. I can keep a whole crowd of half a dozen or a dozen people entertained with those
for
darn
minutes.
Little springs and rings. Yeah,
for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds great. And I know you got a different job that you are working on at now, doing...
Yeah, I do have a full-time gig in a career that I actually can't do here in Texas, believe it or not. I was kind of wondering. I got some clients reached out to me, and I thought, well, if I complete a sale from Texas, am I breaking federal law? How does that...
That's interesting. Maybe just state law, but not federal law.
I don't know how it works, but I've told them all I'm on vacation. I'll get back to you when I'm home.
There you go. Have there been any acts or lectures or something that you've seen so far here? We're just like a day into it so far, that have been outstanding, or somebody that you're thinking, oh, man, this has been amazing, right?
Well, here, as opposed to Abbott's, you know, we've got events that are occurring at the same time, so you have to kind of pick and choose.
That's true.
So I saw Bruce Calver's lecture yesterday.
Oh, and I missed that because I was at another event.
Well, it was good. It was very good, and actually my wife and I walked away, and she kind of got the bug for wanting to learn to do a second sight act, mm-hmm. and then last night we saw Mind to Mind, and oh my Lord.
Yeah.
They are... just spectacular.
Well, I was sitting near you. It was an amazing act. I agree.
It just unbelievable. And we walked out of there, and my wife Valley said, "That's it. We're doing it." And I'm happy just to get her involved.
So, do you perform very much at all, or just kind of? I know you write limericks and things at home, which is part of what your MC work is about. But is there a type of magic that you prefer? I mean, a close up or stand up or stage? Or I mean, you would say you were a demonstrator, obviously doing some close up as well as parlor type stuff, I guess. But
well, having lived in colon for so long, with it being such a rural area, I haven't really been able to niche. So I'm a bit of a general practitioner,
right?
And I like doing my two favorite crowds are family crowds and drunks. Because they're very similar in that you don't know what you're going to get. And I guess there's something about the masochism in me that I like being thrown to the wolves without knowing what's about to happen.
I kind of like drunks. In fact, I have on my YouTube page a video where I had a drunk lady who had come up. And I think it's a... You can go to school by watching this of how I think you should be handling someone who is inebriated without making fun of them. I mean, they could do enough on their own. And you just... Anyhow, I love working with them as well.
Just the unpredictability of it.
That's fun.
Sometimes I walk away with some new material.
That's right, because you thought, oh, this will never happen. Well, sure it did, right there it was. Well, BJ, thanks very much. I hope you're enjoying Texas.
Texas has been wonderful. I already ate at least one meal at Whataburger, and I think we're going to be going back.
Have you had barbecue over at Lockhart's across the street?
Haven't hit that barbecue joint yet, but we're going to be going there.
Very good. Well, I think you're getting ready to start the lecture shortly. BJ Mallon, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Scotty.
Magic Word Podcast. That was BJ. Scotty out. Before we begin the Artem Shukin lecture, and they're getting ready shortly because they just turn down the lights. I've got with me someone who was giving a joint presentation last evening in the collector's meeting. This is Chip Romero was talking about Doug Henning, and the guest I've got with me right now is Mark Jensen, who was talking about Marshall Brodeen. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Scott.
Good to see you, man. So how did you think it went last night?
Oh, I mean, from every Chip and I thought it was fantastic, and everything that we've heard from anyone we talked about who was there is they loved it. Not only was it fun, you know, funny bits and everything, yeah, but a lot of information that people just didn't know about either Marshall or Doug.
Yeah. And I know yours went for about an hour, and I think Chip probably went on for about another hour, and I've heard both of those presentations at different times, but I know that you're always uncovering new information.
Oh, yes. And one of the things I really focused on mine, because it was very multimedia with a lot of Marshall's commercials and some interviews and such, but I did a YouTube search on all the commercials, and then I went into my files to find things that weren't out there, so had not been seen since they aired live, like the very first TV Magic Cards commercial, which is not the one that everybody thinks it is.
Right, okay. Interesting. How far back, what year would that have been?
69.
Oh, okay. It's pretty specific, so you know exactly.
Oh, I know exactly when it was. And then just things, you know, about, like on Marshall, you know, if you sit there and talk to a magician and say, hey, tell me about trade show magicians.
Yeah.
Eddie Tallock, you know, Johnny Thompson and stuff come up. But in 1964, Marshall was put on retainer to work trade shows for specific companies for $2,000 a month. This is 1964, just retainer. Yeah. And then he got paid $500 to $600 a 2 to 3 day trade show to work them. And he was so busy that he was actually friends with Johnny Thompson, and he went to Johnny and said, hey, do you want to be my backup? And so Marshall got Johnny into doing trade shows.
The extra work he had, he gave to Johnny.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. That's a great story. Now, as I understand also, you brought with you a bunch of the TV Magic cards.
Yep. Brought several of the latest edition of TV Magic cards, and the last ones put out were in 2011.
Okay.
And so those were the ones that Marshall had licensed to a company called Nostalgic Toys. And, you know, I pride myself on knowing, you know, pretty much exactly how many TV Magic cards were sold between 1969 and 2011, which is a little over 18 million. And of those last ones put out, 960,000 of them were produced, plus a few change, because the ones that you're talking about are the individually rack-pack packaged ones. But they also did a very limited run of what they called the collector cards, which were the TV Magic cards, TV Mystery cards.
They ran like bricks?
And Miracle cards. No, they were three cards in a box.
Oh, in a box, okay.
With a DVD instruction with it and such, so.
Oh, as I understand it, then last night also you gave the people who were watching and participants a free deck of cards, is that right?
Or? Yep, everyone who attended. So, hey, if you weren't there, it's your loss. But they all got a free deck of TV Magic cards. Mm-hmm. And from Chip, they've got one of the Doug Henning window cards.
Window cards, yeah. Pretty cool. I told people beforehand that there's so much swag you're going to be receiving. There were some really cool gifts, and those were a couple of them.
Yeah, it's just a shame that they didn't really advertise that much. So, you know, it's like a lot of people didn't know, hey, if you show up to this event, you get free stuff.
Yeah, well, I did. That's why I came.
Well, glad you were there, Scott.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate you being there and for sharing some of the history with Marshall. And if you want to learn more, you should go buy John Mooring's book. Where can I get that, and what's the title?
The Magical Life of Marshall Brodeen. It's out of print, but, you know, you can find it on eBay and things like that. Mm-hmm. But if you're a collector, go to jensencollector.com and find my contact info, because I have a limited number of quantities of those books signed by both John Mooring and Marshall Brodeen.
Wow, that's rare. Okay.
And so, you know, if you're a collector, hey, you want them signed. And unfortunately, neither of them's with us anymore. So, you know, they're not available to sign them for you.
Well, there you go. Thanks very much, Mark. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Mark Jensen. Scotty out.
Thanks, Scott.
This morning we had the close-up competition that was going to be for North American Championships. He was going to be going to FISM next year, and I've got with me now a person who is a FISM winner in cards, and also they announced that you were a judge, but I didn't see you judging over there. Here he is, Eric Tate. Hey, Eric.
I'm not a judge. I sit on the board for FISM North America.
Oh, that was what they meant. They were on the board.
So the FISM North America is the International Brotherhood of Magicians, the Society of American Magicians, the Academy of Magical Arts, the Texas Association of Magicians, the Canadian Association of Magicians, and the Chicago Magic Roundtable. So it's six organizations, because when you compete for FISM, you don't compete on behalf of a country or a continent, you compete on behalf of your organization. And I am the rep for IBM. So.
Who is the person who is put forward by the organization, or either one who makes the choices, or what does that entail? What do you do in that job?
The FISM North America board sort of facilitates making sure that the competition happens, right? So, like, right now, we're at TAOM and the SAM combined, and the FISM North America competition is a feature of this. So it's not like the FISM North America is, like, this convention, right? Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
The competition is what we facilitate. So we help to provide judges. We help to provide all of the stuff that goes into actually running the competition portion of this, which, by the way, at this competition, the TAOM competition is still happening at the same time. And some competitors are in both, and some are only in one or the other.
And they're having the SAM also, because that's going to be the People's Choice Award. It's going to be awarded, I think, Monday.
I believe that to be the case, yes. Mm-hmm. So that's what's going on. And then, as far as the IBM is concerned, I help to guide anyone who is interested in going on their FISM path. Some people need more help than others because it's just they don't know who they have to talk to if they want to figure out if they can qualify or compete. And so I've worked with a number of competitors to sort of go, all right, well, do you have an act? We'll submit it to the sort of top brass of the IBM, and we'll get you. If we want you to represent us because we think the act is great, we'll get you a letter of recommendation from the president and say go for it. Mm-hmm. And if not, we'll say no in a polite way, and we'll tell you why. But I don't think anyone from the IBM submitted this year that we didn't want representing us.
Is there a possibility for someone who is not competing in the NACM right now? Who can submit a video to the SAM, and then you guys say, this guy's great, or she's great, and this person should go next year, even though they haven't competed?
Don't quote me on this, because I'm very young in my tenure as a FISM rep. I believe there are paths into competing at FISM that do not involve
winning a competition. Or placing so many points, because they normally do the FISM, right?
Yeah, but I think that if I'm not mistaken, that happens after all of the different regional qualifiers are finished.
Gotcha, that makes sense.
So there are ways, but it's way more difficult. Just go win a competition.
That's the best thing, certainly. Best thing. But I'm just thinking, for some people who didn't come here and they missed the cutoff, for an example, and they're thinking, and all their friends are saying, you should really compete, and they've got a good act, but they just missed the cutoff. And I know a couple of people who did.
Yeah, no, there definitely are ways in. It's just more difficult, and there's a lot more stuff that sort of goes on in the background. Mm-hmm. If anybody is interested in doing that, like they missed the cutoff and they really strongly feel that way, they're more than welcome to reach out to me through my Instagram at Eric Tate, and I'll work with them to see what we can do. I can't make any guarantees, though, because the most direct path, and the one that I would recommend everyone take, is through a qualifying competition. And there are still other qualifying competitions you can go to. So.
Are there competitions that the AMA has, for an example, or perhaps the Chicago Magic Lounge has, that are separate on their own, that they could then have a weekend and have people come in or something? I mean, or do you know of anything
that? Not in North America.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, not in North America. There are other organizations and other competitions that are happening around the globe that people could go to.
Okay, yeah. And represent that that continent, I guess, or country or whatever. And not everybody who is qualified or who wins the North America is from North America.
That's the case. I mean, so like Simon Cornell and Shutagawa both represented the Academy of Magical Arts, which is technically FISM NA, FISM North America. And so they would have represented the U.S. technically because AMA is an American organization, but still.
He's Japanese and he's Australian.
Yeah, exactly. Simon's young. Yeah, and when they won, a lot of people were very quick to point out what country earned that prize.
So,
yeah. But at the end of the day, it's not about, it's really not about what country or what organization you represent. It's about pushing the art of magic forward in brand new, brilliant artistic ways.
Right.
It's really about that. And to get bogged down in the minutia of, oh, did you represent this organization or what country did you typically represent? That's not what this is about. It's about doing incredible magic.
But I would think if you're an American, or let me say an English speaking as your primary language person or magician, if you were competing through the South American or whatever.
Yeah,
Flosoma.
Yeah.
It'd be more difficult because although you're going to be having a lot of judges, they wouldn't necessarily be English-speaking judges. I think you'd have a better leg up, as I'm saying, if you were an English-speaking, versus if you were there, you might be speaking Spanish or whatever, you know, I have a leg up.
I mean, you know,
theoretically.
When you end up in these competitions, though, like I think English and French is the language that most people compete in, and almost everybody who competes ends up competing in English because it's one of the universal languages.
Well, most of the magic books are written in English, obviously, too.
Yeah, but but that just comes down to like what they're trying to appeal to a particular demographic, and when they get to the competition, a lot of people just end up, they elect to either speak in English or to compete in English or to compete silently, because competing silently is still an option.
That's true. Now, I know that Mark D'Souza has been working with Americans to try to step up their game in order to get FISM ready, if you will, because you're competing on an international stage, and number one, if you've never attended FISM, you may not know what to expect.
Yeah.
And number two, their type of the type of magic that is performed there is at a different level than what normally you would see by Americans, because some of the countries will spend a lot of money, like Chinese or whomever, necessarily as a performing art, and have grants where they're spending all day long learning that. I mean, just like that they teach people in Russia to be in the Bolshoi Ballet or something. They've got, you know, countries that will dedicate money and time for magicians to become better magicians. We don't do that necessarily. My question ultimately is, are you involved with Mark in any way, or in helping to improve our American presence?
Yeah, absolutely. I've spent the last 2 years. So, I am involved in Mark's the organization that Mark is creating to try and develop North American competition. The issue is not that we don't have great magicians. We have incredible magicians.
I didn't mean to denigrate. Clarifying that. No, don't mean to, because people will come back to me and say, what do you mean we're no good?
We have incredible magicians. We just don't have a strong competition of culture the way there is in Europe and Asia.
That's why I'd like to talk to you.
and the competition track is different over there, you know, and it's not just that they have great magicians in Europe and Asia. It's that they have different ways to support those, and so there hasn't really been a centralized, concerted effort to step up the North American competitors, and not just step up, but recruit. Right? I mean, like, you know, I'm not saying that I'm single-handedly responsible for getting a couple of the competitors who did really well, who I thought did really well today, in there. But I definitely talked a couple of them into it. The same way, by the way, that I was talked into it. Because FISM was, I think I've said on this podcast before, FISM was not something I ever intended to do.
Yeah, that's right. You were kind of, twisted your arm a little bit, and you said, okay.
Yeah, and I kind of did the same thing to other people. And at first it was one, but now it's three. And hopefully in 2027, it's 5. And in 2029, it's 15, right? And But getting together a group to support North American competitors means more than just finding good competitors. It means finding people who have the right ideas to do it and then giving them opportunity. You know, when I was getting ready to compete, I called up Chicago Magic Lounge and I said, hey, I need to run this act a lot in front of people to get comfortable. And Chicago got right behind me. right? Mm-hmm. And now, you know, the P3 Magic Theater did the same thing for me. The Castle did the same thing for me. And those theaters are stepping up. And there's places for these people to not just work on the act, but work on the act in a way where they can still continue to make their day job.
Sure.
Right? So the competition circuit or track in North America may end up looking different than the way it is in Europe or Asia.
Right.
But we are working to make it so that it's not just feasible and you understand how to do it, that it's attractive,
right,
to want to do it. And so that we can take some of these people who are some of the best magicians in the world and say, look, you know, you're killing it making a living for you and your family, but how would you like to really step up and show it on the world stage?
Mm-hmm.
And making that viable for those people. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to work on doing. Because, well, I should not be an aberration. I should be the beginning of a tradition.
That's a good quote right there. You should be the beginning of a tradition. To kind of wrap up our short talk here, I don't know whether you can speak to this or not because of your position then working with FISM, but do you think those acts we saw this morning were FISM-ready acts?
There's at least two that are. Four possible.
Okay.
So
we had a total of nine.
We had a total of nine, and I think that there were four very strong contenders to go to Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to win? Who knows? At the end of the day, FISM is an art competition, and
that's a very good point. It is,
and you got to, you know, it's we often talk about it as the Olympics of magic, and I think a different way to look at it is like New York Fashion Week. When you look at that really high concept, like what's with that headdress or that, like you'd never wear anything like that.
Right.
Competition is an artificial situation where magicians are performing for magicians in an artificial format. And the magic you see at the highest levels of competition is not always the same kind of magic that we're going to present to lay people.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes it hits different notes that are only going to appeal to magicians and cause the room to erupt the way it does.
Right.
And so I think of it as a high fashion competition.
That's a different way of looking at it, and I see that completely, since it is an art form. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because we don't have anything really in the art world as far as like museums or anything like that where they're competing necessarily on a world stage or like fashion shows.
There is still a very designated, defined rubric for FISM judges, and it is the judges are trained really, really well, and the training they go through, and in addition to the protocols involved, I think make it above reproach, and I think you get a pretty solid outcome on the judging every time because of what they've done.
Because continuity and their training.
The continuity and the training and what they've done to make that a thing. But at the end of the day, I also think that you do have to remember that it's an art competition and it's high art, and so you're looking at things in a bit of a different way than you would with other sort of like, you know, track and field, who's the fastest.
Right. Very good point. Eric, thanks very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
I'm enjoying the convention. I hope you are too.
I definitely am.
It's a fun time. So the Magic Word Podcast. That was Eric Tate. Scotty out. We just finished the evening gala show for the first evening that was hosted by B.J. Mallon, who happened to be the only American, actually, in this evening show. It was phenomenal, but don't take my word for it. I've got a couple of guys here who were watching it with me, Steve Sabo and Matthew Alexander. Hello there, Steve.
Hi.
And this is Matt's voice. You can hear him, too.
Hello.
You might have heard him earlier as we were talking at Magic Live. So, what were your opinions? First, Matt, what did you think about this evening's show, and who stuck out to you?
I thought it was great. The first act, the Frenchman that was doing the kind of cup and balls as a bartender.
Bartender mixologist.
That really tickled my fancy. And then the card work by the Japanese fellow.
Chimpei?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, just beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. And with the music and the piano keys, spectacular.
Yeah. Classical music in the background, everything. It was really great. Steve, what were your thoughts?
Real nice university theater. I really liked the French guy also. I'm a juggler, and I like that part of it. And he mixed in a lot of special effects with the kind of a cups and balls and all that. And, all of them were good. Greg Fruin did a good job with the mega big illusions from Canada.
Good to close with mega big illusions,
Yeah,
proper way.
Yeah, and I thought the Japanese contingent just did great at all that. I'm not a big card guy, but I appreciate their repertoire and their music.
How about the guy who did all the red cups, Matt?
Oh, that was just amazing. The way those appeared every time he turned around. I really...
It's a handful, armfuls of them.
And multiple times.
Yeah.
It was... I'm glad you mentioned it, because I had forgotten about that. But, that was a real treat. Something I hadn't seen before.
Yeah. Steve, what about the guy then also who was playing the guitar? He was kind of like a cleaning guy, and then...
I actually thought that was a great FISM act. It was a great... It kind of reminded me of Tina Leonard...
Exactly.
The cleaning, turning into a rock and roll guy, and it's everybody's fantasy to be, the most important guy on stage, a rock and roll. And I was just waiting for his broom to turn into a guitar, and it did happen at the end. I thought he could have done a little more with that. That was just awesome, though. It was great. I loved every part of that part. He looked like a nerd starting out, and then he ended up being a rock and roll star.
Yeah,
so.
He whipped off his work clothes, and then he had the leather jacket and everything underneath there as well. And then B.J. Malin, as I mentioned, was the MC for this evening. You guys probably hadn't seen B.J. before.
I had not been to Abbott's. It's on my bucket list, and his poetry is great. I mean, I just love all parts of the theater, and that's a great, he tied it all together with a poem between each act, so it was great.
I agree. Wasn't familiar with him, but appreciated his word artistry, and I thought he did a great job of emceeing the show.
Yeah, all in all, I just thought it was well-paced. It was fast-paced, I should say. Everything kept moving along quite well, and each of the acts, tomorrow morning I'll talk with Mark D'Souza, and we'll probably dissect the whole thing. Act by act, because he can pronounce their names. I can't.
Yeah. And the tech work was great. The tech work that they did. I thought it was flawless, pretty much.
Well, you're in a legitimate theater as opposed to here at the hotel, and it sucks. It's bad here.
Yeah, and it was beautiful.
Yeah. And it was nice, again, having that theater experience. I was with this lady, Katie Vine, who is a non-magician. She's just writing an article for the Texas Monthly. And she was asking, why are we going to another theater? Why are we not having it here? And I said, because we're getting a proper theater experience, which is where magic should be shown and highlighted,
I completely agree.
More expensive.
More expensive, but I think it's definitely worth it. I've had a great time with the acts here in the hotel, but it is a different experience when you don't have the echoing and you have better sound and the lighting cues and everything are spot on. It was really well done.
I thought I had a couple laymen sitting right beside me, and their experience was totally brand new, and they thought it was incredible for a layman. Being a magician, we're kind of tainted all the time. We kind of know what's coming sometimes and stuff, but they just thought it was amazing, and to see it through their eyes, it was kind of neat.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the convention overall as far as the last couple of days? We just completed day number two. Well, almost. We're waiting right now for the movie Lost in the Shuffle to play, and then there's going to be a Midnight Madness. But, Steve, you go to the CSAM, of course, all the time, and you're involved with the Life membership. Have you ever attended a TAOM?
Yes, I lived in San Antonio and for like 8 years, and I would say about 4 to 6 of those years I went to TAOM, Austin.
Which is where I think we got to know each other.
Yeah. I was living in San Antonio, and they always had an auction, I remember, for TAOM. They always had people were selling their old gear and stuff like that. It was kind of neat.
Yep.
I kind of miss Texas for that amount.
Because now you're in California.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Matt, you live in Nashville, or where are you?
No, I'm in the L.A. area.
L.A.
So, yep. But this is my first TAOM, despite spending most of the 90s in Houston. I never made it. So, and it's only my second SAM. Mm-hmm. So I'm having a great time. Everybody's very friendly. I love Texas.
What's been a highlight of this convention so far?
I really enjoyed the FISM acts this morning. It was the first time I've ever attended a FISM competition.
It was solid.
It was fantastic. And some really great acts and some real creativity. It was really a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Steve, you?
I like the lectures, of course. The FISM was neat to watch. Very inspirational. Also, the dealer's room was one of the bigger ones I've seen, and my wife said I had to stay out of it, but she gave me a little allowance, so you know how that works.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it, and welcome to Texas, and also then here to Dallas. And next year we're going to be having it again in the Dallas area. The TAOM is going to be in the Embassy Suites, which is just south of DFW Airport, so it's going to be very close as well. Okay, Sean Farquhar saying we're about ready to get started, so I guess we better get ready to wrap this up. Thank you guys very much. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Steve Sabo, and that was also Matt Alexander. And they're about ready to announce the movie. This is Scotty out. Thank you.